We are at the end of a series that I'm really sad we're at the end of, because I've grown a lot myself and really challenged myself while trying to bring a challenge from God's Word to you guys as well. And it's a series about living in the red, and it's a lifestyle that we catch ourselves in. And if you're making this one, you haven't made the other two, or you're missing one, I suggest to grab the tapes, because these really build on each other. Through this series, we started off the first week, and we're trying to figure out, how do I get out of this lifestyle of living in the red? How do I get out of this lifestyle where I'm overspent and just exhausted all the time, and fatigued and irritable and stressed? Because those aren't healthy for us. And so we're asking ourselves, how do we get out of that? And the first answer to that question, the first part of the solution, is that we need to take God up on his day of rest, his Sabbath day of rest that he commanded us to do. We looked at that the first week. That was one of the Ten Commandments. A Sabbath rest is not just a suggestion. It's a commandment. God said, this is something I want you to do. And it really boils down to a question of trust. Because what God says, he says, I want you to work 6 days, and for your 6 days of effort, I'm going to provide for you 7 days worth of provision. And that takes a lot of trust to be able to sit down that seventh day and take a rest and trust that God is going to take care of us, that God's going to provide for us. Now, I asked a few weeks ago, or actually last week, how many of you guys took a Sabbath rest? We raised our hands about how many of us believe that God keeps his promises. Of course, we all believe, I hope we all believe that. How many of us believe that God's a being of his word, and we're all, yes, we can trust God. And how many of us took a Sabbath day? And the hands kind of went down a little bit. So how many of you guys got a chance to take a Sabbath day this past week? That's a little better. It really is a little better. And that's something we need to work at. And I'm asking you guys to join me in this challenge. I don't think I nailed a full 24 hours, but I really shot for it. There was some things there where Jesus says, hey, if your mule or your ox falls in a hole, you'd get it out on the Sabbath day. So there were some things there, and especially with the snow and stuff, there are some things that needed to be done. But we really need to make that a priority. And we need to trust God, and we need to obey his command if we're going to want to find any kind of relief, any kind of rescue from living in the red. Then we went on to our second week, and beyond asking, give me a break, we went to, I need some space. And we looked at the understanding of that we all have our load. We all have responsibilities that we have. We have jobs. We have, some of us have children to take care of, or grandchildren to take care of, a spouse. You got friends, relationships. Every one of us have responsibilities that are given to us. We have a burden that is ours. Now, we have to be careful that we're not taking on a burden that we shouldn't take on. And that whole idea was that we were to join Jesus underneath his yoke. And so with that, we also understood that not only do we have a load that we need to bear, but we also have limits. But we're not a bunch of superheroes, though many of us would like to believe so, including myself. And we have limits, and when we push our load up against our limit, we hit that red line, and we ride that red line. Sometimes we push our load over our limits, and we find ways to live beyond what we really can handle. And then what we do is we find ourselves living in the red. And we understood last week that what we need to do about this idea of understanding load and limits, is we need to get some space in between our load and our limits. We need to build what's called margin in our life. We need some cushion. We need some space. We need space in all areas of our life. And in our time, we need to build in some margin in our schedules. And in our emotions, we need to lighten our mental load so that we're not pushing up against our mental limits. We need to watch out on our finances and not push those all the way up against our limits. We need margin in our life if we're going to want to break free from this condition of living in the red. So we've had 2 weeks of some really good solutions to this problem, some answers of how I can start to move out of this lifestyle, and we have to do them. You can't just sit there and say, yeah, that sounds good. We got to put these into practice. We got to get margin in our lives every day of the week, and then so that when we get to our Sabbath, we can take a Sabbath. Some people get to their Sabbath and you're completely worn out, and you just don't get to enjoy your rest. And if we have margin through our week, then you get a chance to enjoy that rest. So today we're going to be jumping into a topic called Less is More, is the title today, to finish this up. And as I said, we've looked at some solutions, some answers Today we're going to dig a little deeper and we're going to say, you know, what is it that causes us to live in the red? What is it that causes me to live in the red? And that's the question that's going to lead to some other questions, because what we're wanting to do this morning is we're wanting to just get to the root of this problem that has really affected our society, and it really hurts our ability to function the way God wants us to function. And so, you know, we can add a Sabbath day to our week. We can gain some margin. But if we don't go to the root and grab this thing up by its roots and remove it, then your Sabbath day, you might take that for about 3 weeks and then you'll miss a week. You'll try and take it for a few more weeks and then you'll miss another couple weeks and you'll end up back in the same pattern you were in. You'll add margin and you'll think, boy, this margin's nice in my week or in my finances. And then without taking care of the roots to this problem, those things will just fill back in. So we're going to have to cut down the root today. And cutting down the root, we're going to ask some questions. And the first question, as I said, what causes me to live like this? What is the driving force? What influences me? What's the catalyst behind this common tendency to work our bodies into the red? To book our schedules into the red? To extend our finances into the red? And ultimately join our society in living in the red? I think it's an easy answer. I really do. And if I were to ask each of you to look out into society in general, and if I were to ask you, what do you see that they're doing that causes them to live in the red? I think you'd be able to get it right off, because it really is simple. But if I ask you to ask yourself, if I ask you to look at your own life personally, why is this happening to me? Why am I living this way? I don't think your answer would come quite so clearly. What causes me to live in the red? Well, it's a disease that's crept into this land. It's a disease that it's proven to be contagious. And when it gets a hold of you, it's difficult to shake. It's a disease that favors no one certain person. A key symptom to this disease, a symptom that we can look at in our lives and say, all right, let me see if I've got this, is asking, what causes me to do this? The constant feeling that I never make enough. See, that's a key symptom. And some of you are out there thinking, because you're already in denial, and you're already on the opposite side of the fence right now. I'm going to have to drag you over here, because we got to get rid of this dirty, ugly thing that's the roots of living in the red. So we're going to have to drag it out in the light. Some of you guys are in denial, and you're saying, but preacher, I really don't make enough. Isn't that what I just said that you'd say? I don't make enough. See, you're infected by this disease. We are. It's a we thing. It's a society. I don't make enough. Well, maybe you don't make enough, and I can go with you there. But think back for a moment. Think back in your life, in your career. Think back 3 years ago. Think back 5 years ago. 10 years ago. Didn't you make a little bit, don't you make a little bit more now than you did then? For most of us, we'd all say, yeah, I make more than I did 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But do you really have more? I mean, you might have a bigger house, you might have a newer car, but do you have more sanity? Do you have less stress? And at the end of the month, do you see the result of making more? I mean, do you have more left over at the end of the month? And for most of us, the answer would be no. In fact, sometimes the stress level goes higher the more we make. And so, when we get there, and we ask ourselves, why is this happening? Why do I feel this way? It's because every single time we earn a little bit more, we slap our lifestyle up against our income. And that's what causes this feeling. Every time we get a little bit of a raise, or we earn a little bit more, maybe we change jobs and it's a higher paying job, we bump our lifestyle up to match that income instead of leaving some margin there that should be there. And if you're looking back through your past, you're like, oh, yeah, that's exactly how I got here. That's why I feel this way. Because see what happens every time you do that, you bump your lifestyle up against your income, then you obligate yourself to make that much. See, there's no space. There's no margin there. And as we keep doing that, you can watch that gradually happen until you're way up here. And then something might happen, and you're used to living here. You've obligated yourself to that type of a lifestyle. You know, I believe if we could just ratchet our lifestyles down, just a couple notches, we'd all be all right. We'd have less stress. We'd have less pressure. So, why do we do this? You know, there might be some light bulbs going on saying, yeah, that's exactly what I've done. But why do we do this? Well, the answer to that is, why do we do this? It's because I'm infected by this disease. This disease is called affluenza. You might have heard of it. It's not influenza. It's affluenza. It's an actual word. See, affluenza is defined as a painful, contagious, socially transmitted condition of overload, debt, anxiety, and waste resulting from the dogged pursuit of more. Now, some of you guys are looking up at that definition. You're saying, you just described my life to a T. That's what we got. And we're indebted. We're worn out. Here's another definition off the same website there. The bloated, sluggish, and unfulfilled feeling that results from efforts to keep up with the Joneses. An epidemic of stress, overwork, waste, and indebtedness caused by the dogged pursuit of the American dream. See, when we get this virus, this infection, when it invades our life, we're no longer content because we're comparing ourselves to everyone else. We're comparing ourselves to the Joneses. We're chasing after what so many other people have in this world. And when you start comparing yourself to other people, you lose the ability to have contentment. It robs our contentment because we start asking, well, why don't I have more? Why don't I have what he has or what she has? Why don't I make what he has? Why don't I make what she has? Why don't I drive that? Why don't I live there? Why do I have to wait to get this? As we ask those things, we find ourselves more and more living in the red. In a book by Steve and Mary Farrar called Overcoming Overload, they talk about the destructive nature of affluenza. Affluenza attacks relationships. Family relationships, and our children suffer the most. Affluenza causes parents to lose their minds and sacrifice their children on the altar of success. But affluenza almost never reveals itself in the light of day. It is a subtle killer. It is an insatiable desire to be successful, a chronic lack of contentment, a consistent choosing of career over family relationships, and an overscheduled and overloaded life that leaves no room for significant time with spouse and children. So far this morning, just to catch up where we are, we've looked at a symptom of this virus, of this disease. That symptom is that we have this feeling that I don't make enough. And we look, why does that exist? Why is that there? It's because every time we earn a little bit more, we slap our income up against it. And that's why we feel like we never make enough, because we really don't. We create this cycle where we're not making enough. And then we looked at that and we said, well, what causes this? And it's because I have this disease. I have this disease of affluenza. Now let's get down to the root of this disease. What causes this disease? What makes me feel like I don't make enough? What drives me to want to be like other people or to want to have what other people have? I want you to open your Bibles up to Luke chapter 12. I'm going to look at some things that Jesus shared. And he's going to give us our answer to the root of affluenza. Luke chapter 12, and then go on down to verse 15. Matthew, Mark, Luke. Third book in the New Testament. Matthew 12, verse 15. Then he said to them, and this is Jesus speaking, he says, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." What causes this disease? Well, the root of affluenza is greed. And the scary thing is that it's almost impossible to see greed in the mirror. Oh, I can see greed in your mirror. You'd be able to see greed in my mirror. You know, I can look in my mirror and I can see anger. I can see jealousy. I can see all sorts of things in my mirror. But greed is something that you don't typically see in your own mirror. It's something that most of us are never able to see in ourselves. When was the last time you were sitting with somebody and you're having coffee at a coffee shop, or maybe you're having lunch out somewhere, and they confess to you? They say, "You know, I've got a real problem. I'm struggling. My problem is I'm greedy." Really? No one's ever said that to me. No one's ever come to me, and I'm the type of person people come to with their problems. They say, "Hey, I've got this problem. I need you to help me pray for it. I need some biblical advice on this." Never has anyone come to me and said, "Hey, I'm a greedy person." It's not something we see, is it? It's something that we're blinded to in ourselves. See, greedy people don't say things like that. They don't say, "I'm a greedy person." Greedy people say things like, "I'm careful with my finances. I'm a good money manager. I know how to maximize my income." See, those are the kind of things greedy people say. And all sorts of other things, but typically, they don't come to the point where they say, "I am greedy." So Jesus warned us. He tells us here in verse 15, he says, "Watch out." He warns us to be on your guard against this thing called greed. He says that we have to constantly be watching out for it in our life. Because greed is very, very subtle. And then Jesus gives us this huge statement of amazing implications. And he says that a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. See, in other words, if the number one pursuit in your life is this ambition for more and more things, for more and more stuff, Jesus is saying, "Hey, bud, you're looking down a dead-end road. It's not where you want to head." Dave Vaughn is the preaching guy out at Whitewater. And we get together once in a while. We have lunch. We play racquetball. We pray for each other. We pray for each other's ministries. And I've really developed a good relationship there. And one of the things that he shares, it's kind of a catchphrase he uses, is he says, "Remember that your net worth does not equal your self-worth." I thought, boy, that's good. You know, we shouldn't determine our self-worth according to our net worth. We shouldn't consider our value as a reflection of the value of the things we have as we're chasing after the Joneses in our lives. All too often we base our value on those things. And that's a dangerous mindset. And that's the mindset that Jesus here is saying that we need to guard against. Jesus says you need to guard against greed. Because greed is the root to affluenza. And then Jesus shares us a story. He goes and he breaks into a parable about greed. Let's continue going. Let's read this story here about greed. I'm going to break this story up a little bit as we go through it. Verse 16. And he told them this parable. "The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.'" See, this rich farmer looks out in his field and he realizes this is above average. See, he was used to an average harvest. He says, "This one's above average. What am I going to do?" Oh, no. Oh, what do you do? I mean, you know, our hearts go out to this guy. He says, "I've got all this extra stuff. What am I going to be able to do with it?" And I'm sure the listeners there, as Jesus was telling the story, are thinking what some of you may be thinking as well. You're thinking, Well, I know what you can do with it. You can give it to me. Right? I'll take it off your hands. But he doesn't do that because he doesn't even think of it. Why? Because Jesus is giving us a story, a parable to help us see greed. Jesus is building for us a pair of lenses so that we can clearly identify greed in our lives. So this rich man doesn't act in a way that would be generous. No, he acts in a way that would be greedy. And he comes up with a plan. Let's read his plan here so we continue in the story. Verse 18, he says, "Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" You know, as we listen to this story, if I would have left out that little section that Jesus had prefaced his story with, we'd feel for this guy, wouldn't we? We'd look at this guy and we'd have sympathy for him. We'd think that this guy had his act together, wouldn't we? We'd look at this guy and we'd say, he knows what's going on. Because this guy planned for the future, didn't he? He was thinking ahead. He tore down his old barns, he built bigger ones. He was a wise businessman. He was good with his money. I mean, it's a pretty good plan, isn't it? I mean, look at him. He's rich, and he's going to get richer. You know? It's not a bad plan at all. He was fulfilling the American dream. He was achieving what so many people chase after. He was building wealth. He was building retirement. He was successful. See, he had the security of having more and more stuff for years to come. Forbes magazine would have this guy on their cover, wouldn't they? You know? He'd be able to write a book about it and sell it. You know, how to increase your crops. How to build bigger barns. But what does God say about his plan? Verse 20, we'll see what God says about his plan. God said to him, "You fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" What? I mean, we read that. We get to this point in the story. We're like, God, what are you talking about? This guy's a fool. This guy isn't a fool. He's the goal. He's the model. He's the man, you know? He's the example of what so many people want to achieve. Isn't he? He had a lot. He got more. He was rich. He got richer. So this guy's a fool? Isn't this what investing is about? Am I wrong to plan for my future? Is Jesus saying that I'm wrong to save for retirement? Once again, we need to focus in on why Jesus is telling this story. It's very easy to get sidetracked as we sympathize with this guy. Jesus is telling this story because he wants to present to us the effects of greed in our life. Jesus is not giving us a financial lecture on financial peace or how to be wise with the many material blessings that God does bring our way. It's not a story about how to invest the wages that we work so hard for. It's not a story about stuff or what to do with stuff or how to manage stuff. It's a story about the heart behind the stuff. Push the stuff aside. He's talking about the heart behind the stuff. It's a story to help us see how sneaky greed is. How acceptable greed is. How camouflaged greed is. See, and though this man plans to settle down, you know, we're told in the story that God demands his life. He has plans to settle down, but because of the direction he's going, I don't think that would be the end of his story. This guy was in the story to show us what a greedy person was made out of. He had bigger barns now, didn't he? More to fill. Bigger harvest next year. This guy was a greedy person. I think he would have had that insatiable desire for more and more and more. He would have been a man who was infected with the disease of affluenza. And what happens to all that which he had accumulated when he dies? It goes to somebody else. Right? Everything he'd accumulated, everything he worked so hard for to save up, and his life was demanded of him that night. And all that stuff goes to someone else. Why? Not because he made a conscious decision to be generous. All that stuff went to somebody else simply because a rich, greedy person died. Jesus gives us the moral to this story in verse 21. Jesus says, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. Once again, to gain focus here, Jesus doesn't find fault with this guy's ability to be a productive worker. Jesus doesn't find fault with him being a wealthy man. There are wealthy people in the Bible that do great things. The problem is when you put more value on the things that we gain here on earth than the things that we can gain through a relationship with our Father in heaven. See, the problem's not that he built bigger barns. The problem was that his security was in those bigger barns instead of being in God. That's where the mindset comes from. That's where we get to see the heart of a greedy person. The problem is that greed, affluenza, that insatiable desire for more and more, it hinders our ability, and in a lot of cases, it blocks our ability to be rich toward God. You know, we have different stories that we have a rich man that comes to Jesus, a rich man, and says, I've done everything. I've obeyed all the commandments. Jesus says, well, go and sell everything you got and come follow me. And he goes away sad. Why? Because he put more value in the things that he had earned, the things that he had. We have to be careful. Jesus says that you can only serve one master, and when he says that, he brings up two masters, and he compares money and God. He says you can only pick one of the two of those. And that's how dangerous this becomes as we see ourselves living in the red. See, the disease of affluenza and the subtleness of greed is a dangerous enemy. It shakes your hand like a friend. It waltzes around in plain daylight, and no one turns a nose up to it. No one looks at greed with disgust. We consider it the American dream, the way of life. And as I said earlier, as we read this story, a lot of us would sympathize with this man, and we congratulate him for doing what he did. Because it's hard for us to see greed. Because he was accomplishing what so many shoot for. More, more, more. It's what we chase after. And we find ourselves living in the red. Chasing after things that really aren't that important. Not when you step back and look at it. Do that for yourself this morning. Take a step back. And be objective and look at your life. And look at the way that you live. Ask yourself, where do I find security? Is my security in the stuff? In my bigger barns? In my retirement plan? Or is my security in God? Ask yourself, what things do I chase after? See, that's a concrete, tangible, measurable quality there. What do I chase after? Where do I spend my time, my money, my efforts, my passions? What are the things that I chase after in my life? Is it things here? Or are they things that have to do with God? What's important to you? If you really take a good look in the mirror, and you're really, just brutally honest with yourself, this isn't a comfortable topic for anybody that's going to be honest. You ask yourself, have I allowed greed to sneak into my life? Is this what has affected me? Is this the root of this disease of affluenza that causes me to constantly bump my lifestyle up against my income, that causes me to say, I just don't make enough? and we live in the red. Is this why? Is this why I'm so exhausted? Is this why I've traded and robbed my family of time and emotions that they could have benefited from? Because I was greedy and I didn't want to admit it. Because I was greedy and I didn't see it. Because we live in a society that celebrates greed, really. I'm not going to leave you there. We want to get a cure, don't we? If we're all in agreement, yeah, I've got this disease. We need a cure. We're asking, how do we break free from this disease called affluenza that has us living in the red, that has us doing all these things that we really don't want to do, that causes it to where we don't have space between our load and our limits, where we get rid of margin, where we work 7 days a week. I want to obey those things. I want to put those practices into my lifestyle. Then we're going to have to grab this thing by the roots and yank it out. If you want to be able to really experience a Sabbath day rest, if you really want to have margin in your life. And so you're asking, what can I do to get rid of this greedy attitude I have that I want to keep up with the Joneses? What weapon am I going to have that I can start just hacking away at this monster that's eating my life? What vaccine do you have for me that's going to bring a cure to this disease? It's pretty shocking, actually, because the cure is real simple. I need to learn contentment. Notice the word learn there. I need to learn contentment. Contentment's not something that comes, you know, night and day. Contentment's not something that you come about easily or that it's going to happen naturally. Contentment takes discipline. It takes work. It means that we're going to have to be honest about greed. It means that we're going to have to make a conscious decision to not continually bump our lifestyle up against our income in order to keep up with the Joneses. It means that we're going to have to be able to say and really believe less is more. And let that be your catchphrase. Let that be your little memory technique that you can remember about the evils of greed, and just bring yourself back to that statement and say, less is more. We saw what happened to the guy that was trying to launch up on top of that building earlier. Isn't that what we do? We shoot way too high, way too far. We get greedy. We want to be better or stronger. And sometimes those aren't bad ambitions, but when it takes over your life and you're living in the red, and we need to examine our life and say, what's got me? Is it greed? And if so, then we need to start battling this. Go to Philippians. You turn past the Gospels and some big letters there, Romans and Corinthians. And slow down after you get past Corinthians. They're little bitty books after that. Philippians chapter 4. We're going to start there in verse 11. Because Paul understood what contentment was. He says, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be content. He's learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And then look at this. Here's that verse we looked at last week. I can do everything through Him who gives me strength. Remember, we talked about that verse and how misquoted that verse is. Right here, we get to see the verse in its context. See, Paul's saying, I know the secret to contentment. It's finding my strength in the Lord. I know the secret to contentment. It's finding security in God. That's where this verse shows up, and that's where we can claim this verse, and we can say, yeah, I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. I can conquer greed. I can be content. I can learn contentment by trusting in God, by allowing God to be my strength. See, this kind of discipline needs strength from God. You can't do this on your own. This kind of discipline requires a strength that only comes from God. And through contentment, we truly will understand less is more. See, all too often, the things we run after, the things we chase after, are the very things that just disappear when we die. What about the things like a relationship with God? Like worship. Like joy in His Spirit. See, these are things that manifest when we die. Wouldn't those be better things to invest in? Wouldn't those be better things to chase after? I mean, look at the man in the story. God said, "You fool." Not because he was wise in his business transactions. He said, "You fool, because you weren't rich toward me. You put emphasis on things that were going to disappear when you die instead of things that appear when you die." This morning, I want you to ask yourself a question. Am I sick? Do I have this disease of affluenza? Is it because I'm greedy? I want you to be honest, because that's the only way we're going to be able to rip this thing out by its roots. And you're going to have to lean on God and find the strength that only exists in Him in order to really hack away at this thing. As I mentioned in the story, God says to the man, He said, "Tonight, your life will be asked of you." You know, and that brings me to something well beyond just the security of us as Christians struggling with where I'm going to find my security, whether in the world or in God. But that's eternal security. There may be someone here, a few people here, that don't have that security. Maybe you don't have the security of knowing that your eternal destination will be with God. And that's where we need to put our security. That's where we need to find strength. Is knowing my security is securely in the blood of Jesus Christ, because I have died to myself and I've given my life to Him. This morning, if that's a decision that's weighing on your heart, if you're here today and you're saying, I don't have that security. I don't know where I'm going to end up. If God asked of my life today, and I don't want to play scare tactics, but the truth is the truth. I mean, we don't know when we're going to go. We do know we're going to go someday. We don't know when. That's not scare tactics. That's truth. If your life was demanded of you today, are you secure with your decision? Are you secure with where your future is going to be? Are you secure with where your eternity will be spent? It just boils down to a simple question. Am I chasing after God, or am I chasing after this world?